From your world news headquarters on the World Wide Web, it's time for your daily dose of sanity. This is the Maria Heller Show. Maria Heller is a published author, founder of the Universal Wheel, a lifestyle and philosophy based on our interconnectedness to all living things, a Reiki master, and delivers the news with spiritual views. How many intuitive news decoders, animal rights activists, and vegetarian broadcasters are there? Just one, Maria. Maria has provided independent news for a smart audience for over 13 years now on the Maria Heller Show, available at maria.net.
M-E-R-I-A.net.
And now, here is your host, the mouth that roars, Maria Heller.
Good morning, world. Maria here, alive and kicking. How's everybody doing out there? Hope you're doing great. Today is one of those days that I actually have a guest on the show that one of my listeners referred to me. And I'm very glad you did, because I was totally blown away by his book. Some people say, oh, he's a doomsdayer. But hey, truth is truth, whether you like it or not. So let me tell you a little bit about my guest. He is a conservation biologist, a social critic, and a thought leader. His name is Guy McPherson. He's been in front of many different audiences talking about the primary consequences of our fossil fuel addiction, global climate change, and energy decline. He also is obviously a very good friend of the Earth, the actual planet. He is a professor emeritus of natural resources and the environment at the University of Arizona, where he taught and conducted research for 20 award-winning years. Today we're going to talk about his latest book, Walking Away from Empire. So I'm very pleased to have Guy McPherson with me. Good morning, Guy.
Good morning, Maria. Thanks for having me on your show.
Hey, it's my pleasure. I heard so many terrible things about you. I said I better get him on my show.
Yes, I come across as an equal opportunity offender to some people. That's my goal.
Well, that's good. That seems to be my specialty, so we should get along just fine. Walking away from empire, you know, there's still a lot of Americans that don't even want to admit that America is an empire, and a very dangerous one at that.
Yes,
Why do you think that is?
I'm well acquainted with that perspective, with that outlook on this country, and it's astonishing to me that people cannot see that we're constantly at war to get oil, that we're constantly at war, which benefits a very few people in this country to the detriment of many others. It's astonishing to me that people can't see that, that they can't see the transfer of wealth from the poor to the already wealthy. To not view this as an empire is to not understand what it means to be an empire. And yet almost everybody around me ignores, marginalizes, disparages that perspective that points out that this is an empire. Why is that? I think television has a lot to do with it. We have a little less than 5% of the world's population, and we spend 25% of the money spent in the world on advertising. We are the United States of advertising. And occasionally there will be a sitcom sandwiched in between the advertisements, but the cultural programming is absolutely profound. It starts at birth, and it never seems to go away.
Oh, I totally agree. You know, you used a term in your book that I really enjoyed, so I'll be using it a lot. Oil War 3.
It's well underway.
It absolutely is. Well, you know, yesterday I had a news story that said that we've now reached peak water. I think peak water is more frightening than peak oil.
Absolutely. We don't need oil to survive. We got along fine without it for a few million years. But we do need water. We need water, we need food, we need the ability to maintain body temperature, and we need decent human communities. That's really about it. A little air here and there wouldn't hurt, but we don't have a lot of control over that.
Right. Well, you know, you say that we need to save the living planet from imperialism. And when I look at the planet, and, you know, we did talk a little before the show, you know, I've been an environmentalist for over 30 years. And, you know, all the things I warned people about 30 years ago and they laughed at me is happening now. And when you look at imperialism versus the planet, you know, man, especially here in what we call civilization, just sees the planet as something to use up. It's just, you know, here for the taking.
Yes, absolutely. There's still quite a bit of money in planetary destruction, so we're going to keep doing that. Thanks.
Mm-hmm. Well, you yourself have done and suggested opting out of Western civilization as the cure for the destruction of the planet. Do you think that's a little extreme?
No, I think it doesn't go nearly far enough. Almost nobody followed my example in walking away from American Empire, and the machine keeps rolling on. We need to destroy industrial civilization, not just walk away from it.
Well, you know, that kind of sounds a little bit crazy to people. And they might say, oh, is this guy a terrorist? When you talk about industrial civilization, from what I've learned through the years of reading and studying, I think that it really took the first deadly turn with agriculture, the development of agriculture and agribusiness. Would you agree?
I couldn't agree more. And, you know, Derek Jensen points it out very, very well, very thoroughly in his 2006 book, Endgame. He has a great line in there, this culture and most of its members are insane. So when people think I'm insane, I try to keep in mind where that perspective is coming from. It's coming from a bunch of crazy people who are willing to consume the planet for the sake of fiat currency.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, it all began with agriculture. That's when we became enslaved to the initial civilization.
Right.
And it just keeps getting worse and worse and worse.
Right. Well, you know, you can use this if you'd like. I don't know how old you are, but I think you said you came in at the tip of the baby boomer generation. When people tell me I'm insane, I always refer to that song, You May Be Right, by Billy Joel.
Yes.
And I say, just might be a lunatic you're looking for.
Exactly. Yes.
So,
yes, I was born in 1960, so I turned 53 this year and had my 13th birthday last year. I was born on February 29th.
Uh-huh.
So I'm still acting like a teenager, apparently.
Well, why not? What's so great about acting like a grown-up? I haven't seen it. Now, you said, go ahead, I'm sorry.
When I say acting like a teenager, from the government's perspective, I mean acting like a terrorist.
Oh, well, of course, anybody that speaks out for the environment, God, even the FBI's first brochure on how to define a terrorist was, even included vegetarians in that.
Wow.
So I guess we're all terrorists. You talk about environmental overshoot in your book. Would you like to talk a little about that?
Yes, I'd love to. We are... there are so many ways to look at the horrors that we're bringing to the planet. And environmental overshoot is just one of those. And by environmental overshoot and overconsumption, I'm really thinking about what do we need? What do we need to survive? What do we need to thrive? And what we have needed to thrive during the first couple million years of the human experience were those four things I mentioned earlier: clean water, healthy food, the ability to maintain our body temperature, and a decent and loving human community. And instead, we just want more and more and more. Mm. And more is never enough. So we keep extracting and destroying. And so environmental overshoot, from the American perspective, means all of the oil and coal in the world is ours. It means we drive 200 species to extinction every day. Well, that's just collateral damage. We need that for growth. It means fouling the air and polluting the water to a greater extent every single year. And I point out that every year of my life has been worse than the year before, 53 years so far, and every year is worse than the year before. And everybody around me thinks that every year is better because we have smartphones and we have this cool technology that allows us to acquire knowledge almost instantaneously. Well, is that acquisition of knowledge worth destroying every aspect of the living planet? Are we willing to trade in smartphones in the name of genocide? Mm. Apparently, as a culture, we are.
Right.
And people call me the crazy one.
Right. Well, there's a poster they pass around online called "We're a Nation of Smartphones and Stupid People." You talk about, and for some people it might be scary, and maybe before I even ask you this, I'll say this. When I get into conversations with people on what's going on this planet, I often will tell them, number one, if there was a God, And God created humans. What is he waiting for to realize it was a bad experiment and get rid of the humans because the planet is dying? And of course, my friends, you'll get a chuckle out of that. But you talk about a post-industrial stone age. You're not the only person talking about this. I mean, even Einstein said many years ago, the next war, I can predict the war after it, will be fought with sticks and stones.
Yes, absolutely. The post-industrial stone age comes after the post-industrial dark age, after the lights go out worldwide because of economic conditions or pure shortages in the fossil fuel energy we've come to expect and to claim as our right. Well, it's not long after that before the batteries give out on, quote, renewable energy systems.
Mm-hmm.
So then we're in the post-industrial stone age. We don't have access to even distributed PV solar power on rooftops because those batteries don't last very long. I know I have quite an extensive set right here on this property, and they're expensive, and they're good for about 5,000 cycles. That's 12 years if you're keeping track.
Mm-hmm.
So not long after the grid fails, we end up a few years down the road after that without even the relatively simple technology that allows us to keep the lights on.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's interesting because you talked about television as a programming tool, and some of the most popular shows of the past few years have pretty much been about, you know, America after an EMP or after the lights go out around the world, like this new show Revolution, and another show I remember watching called Jericho, which were also very good. But I also look at them as not only is it realistic, but what are they programming or getting us ready for?
Well, right. And so I've seen reference to both of those series and in the discussions I'm involved in, the discussion boards, the online fora, that sort of thing. Those shows come up frequently. So I know a little bit about them. Is it all by design, or is it an awareness among some people in Hollywood that this is where we're heading?
Mm.
I don't know. I don't know if the corporate media is working hand in glove with the corporate government to prepare us for what's coming, or if it's more coincidental and less devious than that.
Well, I don't think anything happens by coincidence when our government and the mass media is concerned, because they are really puppet voices for the official stories. You know, I read better stories, you know, like Hansel and Gretel years ago. You know, it's interesting, and I'd like to share this with you because you're kind of living it already. About, I don't know, maybe 20 years ago, I went to Tahiti. I had never been, and one day I had nothing to do. I decided to take a bus tour, and the bus driver told a very interesting story, Guy. He said that years ago when the Spanish, I guess, you know, the whites came into Tahiti and they wanted to develop it, they went to the Tahitian people and offered them jobs. And to the Tahitian people, jobs was a foreign concept. And they said, well, what do we need a job for? And they said, so you can have money. And they said, well, what's money? And this is, you know, not that long ago. And they said, well, you know, they try to describe money and what you can buy with it. And the Tahitian people looked at the invaders and said, we don't need money. You know, we have everything we need. You know, they grew their own food. They built their own homes. They, you know, produced their own water. They had everything they needed, and they refused to work for the developers. So the developers actually had to bring in workers from China to build Tahiti, you know, what little there was built up, you know, that I had seen.
Right.
But I found it extremely interesting, and it made me remember that the job mentality is something fairly new for human beings. It's another program people got sucked into.
Right, that's exactly right. I mean, can you imagine the sales job, the guy, and we have to assume it was a white guy, who promoted civilization, who said, okay, listen, you've been getting all your food by picking it up off the ground, and there's clean water everywhere, you just drink it out of a stream. Mm-hmm. You get all that going, you have these decent human communities, and everybody knows how to do everything, and you actually work to secure your water and food and your body temperature for a few hours a week. So here's the deal. here's the deal. Working for me, working for the man, now you can work a lot longer hours than that, and you can just do one thing, maybe two things, but do the one thing really well until your wrist hurts so bad you can hardly sleep at night because you keep turning your wrist a certain way. And people bought it.
Mm-hmm.
Are you kidding me? People bought into that. They said, oh, yeah, civilization sounds great. We should grow a bunch of grain. And,
right.
To be fair, not every society bought in for long. A few societies collapsed under civilization, including the one near me, the Mimbres culture. And the Mimbres culture discovered corn a little less than 1,000 years ago. Had been living in this area for several thousand years, discovered corn when almost within 20 years they were in dire human population overshoot and the population collapsed catastrophically. The survivors, the relatively few survivors, did away with corn. They said, we're not doing that again.
Right.
So they returned to the way of living they had been before, which is hunting and gathering and living with a small ecological footprint. So clearly, as human beings, we are capable of learning, at least in small numbers.
Right.
At various points in time.
Right, but I think people have gotten so spoiled and so used to an easy life, which, of course, has been detrimental to their physical health, let alone their mental health. A lot of people totally disconnected from nature, which is probably why there's so many antidepressants sold every day in this country. That I don't know whether people really would rather die than have to live the way our forebears lived.
I think that's almost certainly the case. I run across a lot of people when I speak, and a majority of Americans, at least, would rather die than live without civilization. At least that's what they say now.
That's what they say. But the other thing is, especially I think amongst the rich who don't even know how to wipe their own butt without somebody else doing it for them, like the Queen, which what a job that must be. But when you look at the rich who are so used to paying everybody to do for them, I don't think they could pick up a needle and thread and sew a hole in their boot if they had to, let alone know what to do if the toilets don't flush. They may just implode from a shit backup. I don't know how else to say it. But when I look at, most of society, I really, I'd like to be a positive thinker, but I'm also a realist. And I think the majority of people are just not going to make it.
I think that's absolutely right. A pretty decent ecologist by the name of Paul Chaferka recently did an analysis on the human caring capacity of the planet. Now that we have stripped away so much of the living planet and fouled all that air and dirtied all the water, and most people point to the beginning of industrial civilization, or go back even further than that and say, well, maybe 500 million, maybe a billion people will survive. Paul Chaferka comes up with a number of 20 to 50 million, which is, what, 0.1%?
Right.
Of the current number?
Drop in the bucket.
Yeah. I mean, it's for all practical purposes.
Right. Well, when you look at the Georgia Guidestones, I think they say the optimum planet, one of their goals is 500 million people on Earth. You look at the One World Disorder, they, of course, want to reduce the population by billions. But if you look separate from that, humans are doing a good enough job of eradicating their own lives through destruction of their own web of life.
Well, yes, we are destroying habitat at an astonishing pace. In fact, given the 16 self-reinforcing feedback loops we've triggered on the climate front, it's hard for me to imagine that we'll have any human beings beyond mid-century.
Well, that's a pretty heavy-duty proclamation there. Mid-century is only around the corner.
Yes, it certainly is.
Mm-hmm.
I just don't see how, 1 degree, as pointed out by the United Nations in 1990, 1 degree is catastrophic, and sure enough, we're approaching 1 degree centigrade above baseline, above the beginning of the Industrial Revolution. Mm-hmm. And we've triggered 16 self-reinforcing feedback loops, including release of methane from the Arctic. Methane is, in the short term, 70 to 100 times more powerful a greenhouse gas than carbon dioxide. We're at 400 parts per million carbon dioxide in the atmosphere. We've never been there in the history of humans before. We're about to lose all Arctic ice, perhaps as early as this September, almost certainly by the summer of 2015. That has never happened in the history of human beings.
Right.
So 400 parts per million, 180 parts per billion of methane, which again is, 1,800 parts per billion of methane. So the equivalent of nearly 600 parts per million carbon dioxide in the atmosphere. And a safe level is probably about 280 parts per million in the atmosphere. That carbon dioxide is up there for at least the next 1,000 years because it's so recalcitrant in the atmosphere.
Right. Well, you know, there are people that truly do believe that a lot of what's happening on the planet is normal for the planet. But there have never been this many people around actually watching it happen. A lot of it, the activity from the sun. And for me, when people present that to me, I say, yes, but humans are the only beings I know on this planet dumb enough to destroy what they need to live on this planet, the air, the water. I mean, I was reading this morning how much radiation from Fukushima is poured into the Pacific Ocean. And I think people think it just disappears when it goes into the ocean. I think the lack of scientific knowledge is another big block for Americans not really getting what's going on. But when you look at the whole picture, it's like, you know, animals kill because they need to feed, right? Humans kill for way more reasons. But the crazy thing is humans are killing themselves and they don't want to realize that.
No, nobody wants to realize, nobody wants to have it pointed out that they're fouling their nest.
Right.
But that's exactly what we're doing.
Absolutely.
We are fouling the nest.
Well, what do you say to people that truly believe, Guy, I mean, they 100% believe, maybe it's because of the movies, that science is going to save us?
Well, mostly they're confusing science with technology. So really what they mean is technology is going to save us. And so it's pretty easy to point out the many examples of technology that have gotten us into this mess. And so the technology has allowed us to burn all those fossil fuels. The technology has allowed us to despoil our water and then clean it up before we drink it.
Mm.
The technology has allowed us to irradiate ourselves with ionizing radiation.
Mm-hmm.
Witness San Onofre recently and Fukushima. Witness Hanford, where the containment ponds are leaking into the groundwater.
All right.
That everybody in the region drinks to survive. So those are some enormous technological forces that are all pointing in the wrong direction. So I'm not sure that technology has ever done us any good in the long run.
Right.
Technology allows you and I to live long, decent lives. It gives us eyeglasses and medicine, antibiotics, and so on. But all that does is exacerbate human population overshoot, make it even worse every single day. So we're adding more than 200,000 people to the planet every single day. That's birth minus death.
Mm-hmm.
Because we can save every baby now and keep them alive. We can let people live until they're over 100 years old, barely, and consuming a tremendous amount of material along the way,
mm-hmm.
Without recognizing that there are costs. There are costs to this way of living.
Absolutely. Well, you know, I'm a little ahead of you on the curb on baby boomers, because I got about 10 years on you, so a lot of my friends are close to my age. And when we look back, I mean, yes, we've gotten a few perks, and I will tell you my favorite, of course, is the computer, because it makes my life so much easier. But all of us are in agreement that it wasn't worth the trade-off. Not just, you know, now, but from just simply 50 years ago. What we have lost in the past 50 years was not worth what we have gained.
That's a staggering admission, and you have very thoughtful friends. I don't think very many people would agree with that. Almost everybody I know says that 200 species a day, collateral damage. That's just the price we pay to have our smartphones and this technology, and I'm willing to pay it because I don't see it. I don't see that it's having an adverse effect on my life, so whatever.
Right.
Just keep going.
Right, it's all about me. Well, you know, on the plus side, one thing I will tell you, and you know, I have a lot of friends who are either 60 or approaching 60 or a little over. What we realize is the older you get, the less stuff you want, the less stuff you realize you need. And there's something about the magical number 60 that makes you immediately start thinking about downsizing and giving away your stuff. I don't think it's because we're all expecting to drop dead tomorrow. We just get a realization that what did we need all this for? You know, what did we work so hard for? You know, because it reminds me of Carlin's skit on stuff. The more stuff you have, the more paranoid you have to be if somebody's stealing your stuff. But there is something I think that only comes with age. And, of course, in a country where they totally disrespect seniors and we're all considered trash, the invisible generation, you start to realize that, you know, was it really worth it? You know, and what do I need all this crap for? I'd be okay in a one-room apartment.
Right, absolutely. I mean, talk about your first world problems. There's a lot of people out there who don't have a roof over their heads, and we need a bigger and bigger place to store our stuff, as George Carlin pointed out.
Right, exactly. You know, years ago I interviewed some producers of a film they made on Cuba. And, of course, Cuba's been nothing but demonized in the United States. But when we put in our sanctions and whatnot on Cuba, Cuba became independent. And it actually is today one of the, I think it's the number one producer of organic produce in the world because we forced them to grow their own food. But I remember in the film, they were interviewing a professor, probably with the same tenure you had when you were teaching. And they said to her, you know, if you were a professor in the United States, you would have a much nicer home, you'd have drive a better car, you'd be making more money. And the professor looked at the interviewer and said, but we don't have any people living on the street in Cuba. You know, it's worth it to me to live the way I live to know that no child is going hungry tonight. So you
right.
kind of think about, well, who's the civilized nation?
Right. So the banksters are not going to go for that.
No, they're not.
Last I heard, we had about 20 empty, foreclosed upon homes in this country for every homeless person.
Mm-hmm. So, well, because we're a compassionate country, didn't you hear that?
Yeah,
we're a compassionate Christian nation. You know, when people talk about Christian, I always say to me, Christian is a verb and not a noun.
Right.
So, okay, so we covered science and technology is not going to save us. Is religion going to save us?
Be difficult for me to imagine how, because it seems to me that, well, first of all, our national religion in this country is greed.
Mm-hmm.
All we really worship is economic growth, and that's what's driving us to ruin.
Mm-hmm.
If we're talking about more conventional religions, like the Abrahamic religions, one could argue quite convincingly, I think, that they are part and parcel of civilization, that they arose in lockstep with civilizations. That you could, Daniel Quinn makes the case in his writing that the fall, as described in the biblical book of Genesis, was really the fall from gardening to large-scale agriculture. We didn't have the patience, so Cain had to kill Abel and build the world's first cities. So from that perspective, from any perspective that I can see, religion is not going to save us as a society. I'm not denigrating the role of religion in individual people's lives and their ability to seek and maybe even find meaning in their lives as a result of varied life experiences.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think as a society, religion is helping much.
Right.
If any.
Well, you're going to look at how much destruction and war and death the major religions have created. And, you know, for people that might have a short memory, you know, when George Bush invaded Iraq, it was originally called a crusade.
Yes.
Okay, and then they, oops, we better change that word. But, I mean, it's obvious it's a religious war. You know, you said that our national religion is greed. And I have to agree with you. And and for people out there that haven't seen the series, The West by Ken Burns, I highly recommend it. And he shows very much, he said, the motto or religion of America, of greed, began with the California Gold Rush. And then it was all about greed ever since.
So we've been going down this road a long time, and as it's difficult to convince individuals that we're even on this road, much less to get them to stop, and maybe even reverse direction.
Exactly.
Society has driven us and is driving us in all the wrong directions.
Right off a cliff, in actuality.
Yes.
Guy, we're going to take a short break, so I'm going to ask my listeners, of course, to stay with us. Guy McPherson and I will be right back. Maria here. Welcome to the one-stop shop. Yep, it's a one-stop shop, maria.net. You get real news here, you get real environmental news, you get real health news that may save your life one day, you get spiritual news and some real hope, you get political news, you get warned of upcoming false flags, which makes you know when to zig or when to zag. Learn how to stay happy and healthy in a world obviously gone mad. I can't force you to subscribe to my show, but I can only ask you, if you're sitting there listening to this and you're not a subscriber, to stay in integrity. Get over to my website, maria.net, M-E-R-I-A.net, and pick a subscription of your choice. Not only are you supporting my work, but you're supporting truth for everybody on this planet. You can also gift your family, gift your friends with a gift subscription. If you really love people, the best gift you can give them on any holiday is the gift of a real education. Stay out of fear. Remember, learning how to laugh at all of this is part of what I teach you. And now, let's get back to the show. Welcome back. I'm speaking with Guy McPherson. His book is excellent, called Walking Away from Empire. And unlike a lot of other people who blow all the, oh, here's all the problems we have, Guy's book actually gives you a lot of solutions. You may not like the solutions, but the solutions are there. So I thought I would preempt the second half of the show with that. And you can check out his work at GuyMcPherson.com. There's a live link right here. Excellent website. Lots of good stuff to read. Right now, it surely looks to me, and I don't know if the majority of Americans notice it, Guy, that America is collapsing. We have no face in the world anymore. The latest hero, Ed Snowden, that came out exposing how we've been spying on other countries that are supposed to be our allies, has pissed people off. We've lost every war we've been in since Vietnam, and our country's broke. How could it be that people don't see that the experiment that was the United States is over? It failed.
Well, I think it was Upton Sinclair who pointed out 100 years ago that it's difficult to get a man to see something when his salary depends upon him not seeing it. And so as long as we have the world's reserve currency, as long as we have fiat currency that keeps flowing towards people and allowing them to buy bread and circuses, I suspect a lot of people will never see it because they don't want to see it. Mm-hmm. And culture piles on with every news report and every television show that is watched. The media make it seem that everything's all just perfect, that American empire is, one, not an empire, and that the American experience is working out just great. We are so benevolent, and we treat other countries so well. And Barack Obama, the man who said he would protect whistleblowers, has now changed the name for them. Snowden is not a whistleblower, he's a leaker. Hmm. So leakers are bad. So it's as if 1984 by Orwell was an operating manual.
Absolutely. It just came 20 years later than Orwell thought.
Exactly.
Well, you know, you do have some pretty interesting stuff in the book. One of them was, can the collapse of civilization be a good thing?
And yes, I don't see how it can be a bad thing. We've persisted as humans some 2 million years before the first civilization showed up, and life was not nasty, brutish, and short. It was not a Hobbesian existence. People lived close to each other and close to the living planet that supported them. As I indicated earlier, people spend an inordinate amount of their time having what we would call fun, if you can remember what that's like,
mm-hmm.
actually not working to secure the elements we need to thrive, that water and food and body temperature angle that I mentioned before,
mm-hmm.
but in fact spending almost all their time enjoying themselves. And
what
2 million years or so, we did that. And then civilization shows up, and then debt shows up, meaning money shows up. And then suddenly everybody is indebted to the system. I like to tell people when I graduated from college, you were immediately indentured into servitude because culture told you to buy a house. So now you have a mortgage for somewhere between 15 and 30 years. And so that means you got to have a wage job for the next 15 or 30 years to pay off your house. Well, college is the new house, and you don't even get the house.
Right. You don't even get a good education.
And you have so much debt, you'll be working for the rest of your life, and you don't even get the house.
Mm-hmm.
This is a good thing?
Right. Well, it just shows how gullible people can be. You say the earth is too big to fail, and I love that line. The earth is too big to fail, but it looks like nobody wants to bail her out.
Right. That's exactly right. And by the way, bailout is a great metaphor. You know, we're bailing out all these banks and all these countries and so on. And bailing is what you do when the ship is going down.
Mm-hmm.
So it seems pretty evident to me that the ship is going down, that we're maybe one step away from a layman on steroids kind of moment when Spain goes under, or Portugal or Italy or Ireland or Greece or any of those countries that there's not enough money in the world to bail out. Then what? Then the ship goes down. If the Eurozone goes down, it takes us with it. If China goes down, currently they have a bigger annual GDP than the United States does. If they go down, we're going down too.
Mm-hmm.
Because at this point, they pretty much own us.
Right. Well, but the other thing is, you know, if civilization, and I don't know how civilized people are, it just seems the more news stories I cover, the less civilized people look to me. If it went down, you know, there are a lot of problems that would be solved immediately. Globalization would be gone.
Absolutely. Globalization, indentured servitude, the transfer of wealth from the poor to the rich, our ability to destroy every aspect of the living planet that we actually need to survive. All of those things are kicked to the curb.
Right.
When we get rid of industrial civilization. So
right.
What's not to like about that?
Hey, I agree. And all your politicians are gone, too. And your police forces, your militarized police force that wants to kill you in your home. And you don't have to ask somebody else to have freedom. You know, not that we have any freedoms left in the United States. Another thing most Americans don't want to face up to. You know, we're fighting these wars for freedom. Well, where's the freedom? Because we don't have it. So, you know, to me, yeah, there are a lot of benefits, but in a way I could understand where people would get afraid or find it very scary because they would have to depend on themselves.
Yes, absolutely. As my friend Timothy Scott Bennett says, we are born into captivity. And not long after that, we're enculturated by what we perceive as normalcy bias into an extremely abnormal culture.
Mm-hmm.
And so we think that this is the only way to live. At the level of our species and perhaps a vast majority of the other species on the planet, this is the only way to die,
mm-hmm.
civilized way. But people don't want to hear that because of the whole money thing, because of being the top of the heap, because of being told that we're a benevolent empire, not even an empire at all, and all those lies we're told
right.
from the time we're born, essentially. It's hard to overcome that stuff
right.
when it's coming at you from every angle.
Well, you know, when the terrorists arrived on the shores of America, they found the natives here to be uncivilized. So they decided to wipe out 12 million of them to show how civilized they were with their holy book. But here you had a race of people who were physically strong. Some people actually said they were almost like superhuman. They were physically strong, beautiful people, super healthy, working in harmony with the earth. Didn't understand the concept of selling land to the terrorists because nobody owns the land. They understood that. And everything they did, they took into account the next seven generations. You know, here we are 200 years or so after that invasion. And I have to tell you, Guy, I fear for the world my grandchildren are growing up in.
As well you should. It would surprise me very much if your children and grandchildren have what we would consider a normal lifespan, because we are destroying the climate. We are destroying the habitat for our species. When we no longer have a habitat, it doesn't matter how clever we are. It doesn't matter that we can filter water. If we don't have habitat, if we can't grow food, if we don't have the physical environment to support human beings, then everything else goes out the window. Forget about it.
Right. Or as we said in Brooklyn, forget about it. Well, you talk about, and you know, there's some chapters in your book, I actually wrote the word great on the beginning. You talk about investing in durability. What is durability? Is it the same as sustainability?
No, I think sustainability is a myth, because it implies that we can sustain something forever. And the human experience is just a really, really minor and almost insignificant blip in the history of the universe. And then you look at civilization within that, or industrial civilization within that experience. So we have 150 years in a 15 billion year old universe, or a 4.6 billion year old Earth, or in the 2 million years of the human experience. So this, what we take for granted, is just an extremely abnormal and temporary condition. The thermodynamics, most notably that detested second law of thermodynamics, also precludes sustainability. We just can't sustain what we're doing, because it requires infinite growth on a finite planet. So I prefer the term durability, and the things that we're doing here at what I call the Mud Hut in southwestern New Mexico are focused entirely on durability. So we have a home with straw bale walls and a metal roof and an acid stained concrete floor. And the home will be standing and habitable long after there's no habitat for humans in this part of the world. We focus on getting water out of the ground in the absence of fossil fuels, so we can live quite comfortably here with no fossil fuels at all. We invested in solar panels to suck the water out of the ground, and in extensive gardens to grow our own food, and a very large orchard as well. So this is what I would consider a relatively durable set of living arrangements, as contrasted with industrial civilization, and most notably the growth for the sake of growth paradigm that we have adopted in this country. Those are not durable. They're certainly not sustainable. They're not even durable. They won't last, I don't think, beyond a few more years. But a durable set of living arrangements can last for a very long time, not forever.
Right.
At some point, all humans go extinct, probably at our own hand.
Well, we've been in the sixth mass extinction for quite some time now, another topic most people don't want to discuss.
Yes, exactly, and this is the most rapid and most dire of any of the six great extinctions. And who's driving it? Industrial civilization. We are. We are driving species to extinction at a rate probably at least 1,000 times more rapid than the baseline rate of extinction. That's a pretty big number.
Right, right.
You're not going to get away with that forever.
Well, what happens, though, you know, it's fine and good that you were able to do that, but there's a lot of people that are really up against it, living in big cities, that can't just say, I'm going to go out and build myself a straw bale house in the middle of New Mexico and become self-reliant. What happens? What options do they have?
Well, I hear a lot that because of financial reasons, people can't pursue this kind of life. And I point to the land trust that's exactly 1 mile up the road from me. And the land trust is a trust. It was given in perpetuity as a property, not private property, but as a trust. And there, 13 people share 19 acres and grow a vast majority of the food they eat and rely on solar technology to get the water out of the ground and delivered through the taps and that whole thing. And none of these people has any fiat currency to speak of at all. They are living in dire financial poverty by choice because they would rather live than work. These are intelligent people mm-hmm. who work hard enough, work long enough to make enough money to support their way of life, which is well below the poverty line for each of the people who live there.
Mm-hmm.
And they could live that way anywhere in this country they wanted to because they have such a light footprint on the land.
Right.
But they choose to live here because they love this place.
Mm-hmm.
Similarly, I have neighbors who are multimillionaires who could live anywhere they wanted in this country or outside of this country, and they choose to live here because they love this place. So I don't think it requires an enormous amount of fiat currency to live differently. I've hosted several people here, the most interesting and extreme example of which was a guy who, about 5 years older than me, so in his late 50s, could hold all of his worldly possessions in his lap when he sits down.
Mm-hmm.
And he just wanders. He meanders. He wanders. He house sits. He pet sits. And he makes a really marginal living financially doing that because he wants to get out and see the world. He wants to live differently than other people. He hasn't been trapped by this culture into thinking that there's one way to live, and that way is to make all the money you possibly can so that you can run the air conditioner all the time or whatever, you know, all these little oddities that we take for granted. But when you look at them from a historical perspective or the perspective of a different culture, you realize, well, that's actually a very strange way of living, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. Well, what's strange here is normal somewhere else. So,
right.
You know, it just depends on what people's idea of strange is. You know, you use a couple of really good sayings in your book because they were good enough for me to write down. One of them was, and it really is the truth in America, and a lot of people still don't understand this sentence, we have socialism for the rich and capitalism for the poor.
Right.
Which basically means it gives you the poor can always continue to bail out the rich.
Exactly, which is, you know, one of the defining elements of civilization, especially in its current form.
Mm-hmm.
We will spend every amount of tax money to bail out the rich, to bail out the big banks, to make sure that the people who have a lot of money, who we call job creators and worship because they have lots of money, to make sure they aren't financially impaired in some way.
Mm-hmm.
But we got no problem. So we have socialism for the rich. But we got no problem using grinding poverty to destroy the lives of poor people.
Mm-hmm. Right. And then saying, oh, they have the same opportunity as the rich, which, of course, they don't. You know, I watched a movie a few weeks ago called Park Avenue, and I highly recommend people watch it. It's in documentary form. You can rent it on Netflix. And what they showed, and it was a really good example, Guy. They had showed two young people sitting down to play Monopoly. They were sitting in separate rooms playing the same board, but unbeknownst to the kid, to one of the kids, the other person had all the money and all the property when they started the game. And they ran it as a test. And if the other person has all the money and all the property, there's no way you're going to win at Monopoly.
Right.
And I think it made a really good point for our society. You know?
Absolutely. It's a little club, and you ain't in it.
Right. Back to George Carlin. You also use one of my favorite expressions in your book, except you cut it short, so maybe you'll want to use the rest of it that I use. You said the scum rises to the top. I always say the scum always rises to the top of the pudding.
Yes, and that's modified from Edward Abbey, who said society is like a stew. If you don't stir it up every now and then, the scum rises to the top. So I've been trying to stir it up to keep the scum from rising to the top.
Well, you obviously stir it up.
Clearly, I've been unsuccessful, however.
But you know what? You've been successful in your life. And that's all that really matters. And people don't get that. You know, years ago, I think it was 2005, you know, gas was still cheap. You know, everybody was still kind of, it was right before the crash. I decided, because I actually had some money because I had sold my house, that I was finally going to buy myself a new car. And even though I could afford a piggish new car, my consciousness, of course, wouldn't allow me to buy it. So I bought a Prius. I had the only Prius in town. And I have to tell you, the nasty remarks I got from people driving that car were off the charts. Okay. I mean, strangers would come up to me and say, ah, you think you're making a difference?
Right.
And my answer was always the same. I'm making a difference to me. And I couldn't understand why did it piss people off so badly, the kind of car I chose to drive.
Right. Well, I suspect because it made them realize, made them think. And we hate to think.
Well, you don't want to think, and then you feel guilty, especially if you're driving right. Some big eight-cylinder gas-guzzling SUV that's bigger than a bus. But that's their choice. You know, I don't go around slapping stickers on their gas guzzlers. But, I mean, I really had to go through a lot of crap. I still take a lot of crap for the way I eat because I'm a vegetarian. I don't know why that bothers so many people. I'm an organic eater. That bothers people. And I don't know about you, but I still don't have a cell phone and no intention of ever having one, which also bothers people.
Right. Yes, if you live simply, you're living outside of the dominant paradigm, and it makes people uncomfortable.
Exactly. I mean, I had a visit by one of my sisters, as a matter of fact, and I'm driving her in my Prius. I'm taking my burlap bags to the supermarket. I'm, you know, lowering the heat every time she's jacking it up. And she finally looks at me and she says, oh, my God. She says, you live like a European. And I looked at her and I said to her, and you say it like there's something wrong with that.
Exactly.
You know?
Exactly. You should be living like a hedonist, like an American. Oh, they're the same thing.
Right. So, you know, it's personal choice. And I think I know how frustrating your work has been. And how easy it is to get frustrated, believe me, when you're trying to warn people of these things for decades upon decades. But the bottom line is, we're only responsible for what we do. You know, and if other people choose to do and follow the flock, well, the sheep always go to the slaughterhouse. I mean, that's just the way it goes.
Right. That's an excellent point, and I have been struggling personally because I'm a teacher, and it's what I am, not just what I do.
Mm-hmm.
So it's something within me. And a teacher believes him or herself unsuccessful if nobody follows, if nobody learns.
Right.
So
well,
that's something really good to keep in mind. Thanks for bringing that up.
Absolutely. We're all here for our own journey.
I'm very disappointed and view what I've done as a failure because it has not educated people into making significant changes in their own lives.
But it's not a failure because you've educated the right people, the people that will survive. And that's the difference. You know, I could look at other people's audiences, you know, because they're floating big bucks, you know, from corporations to their shows and say, oh, I'm a failure. However, I know that every one of my listeners has changed their lives because of my show. So I'm not here for them. I'm not here for the masses. And Guy, you've got to realize neither are you. You're here for the few intelligent, rational people who care about the earth and care about the next generation. And you're doing a great job because, hey, you ended up on my show.
Yes. I was actually looking at the guests through time on your show, and it's quite an impressive cast. You're really scraping the bottom of the barrel here today, aren't you?
Oh, I don't think so. I think every one of my guests, and this might sound a little corny to you, I think every one of my guests is a very special soul. Very powerful souls come to this planet to change it. Whether people hear it or not, it doesn't really matter. We're here to do what we do for us. So keep that one in mind.
Well, thank you.
You're very welcome. Well, thanks so much for joining me today, Guy. It's been a pleasure. Stay in touch.
It certainly has. I very much appreciate it, Maria.
Oh, you're very welcome. Take good care of yourself.
Thank you.
Bye. Guy McPherson, walking away from empire. And either we walk away or they're going to kick us away. One of the two. I'd rather walk. Anyway, I'll be back tomorrow with a new show. Thanks for supporting the show, and I'll see you guys then.
Thank you for listening and supporting the Maria Show. Tell others what you learned today. Knowledge becomes wisdom only when it's shared. Encourage others to subscribe today. www.maria.net. Often imitated, never duplicated. A world of information all in one place. www.maria.net. Always ahead of the curve. Always on your side. Get active or get radioactive. Subscribe today.